It started with the whistle.
People want to take drugs, do things in their own life. It's not much for me to condemn them. Why in God's name would you get someone to videotape it?
Who knows, there might be five Ashes tests played between Sydney and Melbourne.
If there's any race that should be the race of champions, it should be the Cox Plate.
No disrespect, but there's C and C graders who will help a good team, but they're not going to, you know, take your team to the promised land.
And he should go to Carlton, and they should just give Fremantle pick six and we should just move on.
On RSN Central, welcome to the Tuesday Forum.
Love your opinion. Plenty of topics to discuss on the forum today, 10:34. Thanks to the Herald Sun and the Ascot Vale Hotel. It's a big hello to Johnny Ralph. G'day, Johnny.
Hello, guys. And I booked in my slot with the great Courtney Welsh Sunday night at the Ascot Vale Hotel. Cannot wait to have 17 million over the drip tray.
Hello to you, Welshy. Thanks for the invite, lads. Appreciate it. I know where I stand in the pecking order.
Yeah, good morning, Gareth. Good morning, Ralphie. I did see that there was a text going around last night that the Mallee Bull had been invited. So that's not you, Gareth?
No, that isn't me. It's like you can go and get buggered, really. Like, I'm home alone, need a little bit of company, and I've been deserted. Anyway, if I could hang up, I would right now, but we'll push on. No, I'm enjoying.
Famous face from Birchip. But yeah. Can I, before, question with that notice,
yes,
Gareth?
Yes.
So I was talking to the 8-year-old who is a budding basketballer, and was talking about how Brittany Griner can slam in the WNBA. And, you know, it's not the NBA. She said, what's the W? I said, that's the women's. And so she said to me, well, why is it that we get the weird one or the odd one? Why do we get the W? And why do the men get the best one? And I've always been one of those people who thought, oh, let's not get too PC. We've got the AFL and the women's is the W, you know, the W equivalent of it. And I couldn't really defend it to her. I couldn't really say, you know, why it is that it's AFLW and only AFL.
How so what would you call it, Ralphie? AFL?
You'd probably have to call it AFLM and AFL, you know, W. And I've never been one that necessarily felt like we needed to do it first because, you know, clearly the men have had the designation for, you know, the better part of 30 years. But as I was explaining that to Georgie and as I was trying to defend that, I thought, I can't really defend that. You know, why is it that the girls get the odd one and the blokes get the best one?
I don't really care. Just call it AFL whatever. AFLM, AFLW. I think sometimes we talk about situation and get outraged over something so small. Like, I don't know how it bothers anyone. It's like, call it AFLM. Call it AFLW. We know what competition is. We embrace the competitions. We're embracing women playing football. I'm loving it. Call them whatever, Walshy. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah, I'm not even sure why we need to differentiate, truth be told. If we're watching or listening, you can tell pretty quickly which season, and we know the times of the season. So I'm not so sure we need to actually have any differentiation at all. It is the AFL.
Are you enjoying the build-up to the WS Cox Plate, Walshy?
I am. I was disturbed not to be on track this morning, as always, on the Tuesday before the Cox Plate. I think that's a wonderful tradition. You see that little barbecue going every morning. You get tradies coming in, you get office workers coming in. Yep. I'm longing for that sort of return. I know we've had plenty of those situations. I think in 10-horse fields, I think it's a decent size for the Cox Plate. I think there's a few question marks surrounding... You know, the favourites, I'm intrigued to see how it pans out. Does the 3-year-old run the trip? Does Zaki get around the track? It's, under race conditions, how does Mary Elegant go compared to a couple of years ago? I'm fascinated in what unfolds on Saturday.
We might play a grab from Annabelle Neesham on the RSN 927 platforms this morning, talking to Michael Felgate, Matthew Stewart. I think Michael Brow, the CEO of Moonee Valley, was there along with Jason Richardson from racing.com. And Matty Stewart asked the question regarding the jungle drums around Saki not being 100%. This was her response.
You boys create those drums. Yeah, absolutely fine. I don't know why anybody is criticising. He beat Probabil, who's an unbelievable mare, by 2 lengths in his first start. I can't see why people are criticising the run. The win at a weight for age group one, I know it's a small field. He won the race by 2 lengths. Hands and heels. Like, I'm not having a bar of it that it wasn't a good run. So for me, all I'm concentrating on is my horse. I'm not worrying about people's opinions. You know, track work in a normal day is not open to the public, and we know how our horses work. But obviously, you know, it's great. The build up, you have breakfast with the best, and you know, the, I suppose the public, as it were, get an insight into their track works and things. But they don't know these horses like the regular riders do. So for me, as long as my rider is happy, Raphael, and as long as Todd is happy, then I'm happy, because, you know, they know the horse. They've known the horse since the day we had him. And yes, it was obviously disappointing at Caulfield not to win, and maybe he didn't look as comfortable going around there, I didn't think, as he did around Sandown. But he's done two brilliant pieces of work at Moonee Valley, and I think, you know, he can bounce back and sort of bring his A game to win the Cox Plate.
It's like watching Seabiscuit when Seabiscuit returned to the racetrack. A few of the spies out there on track work morning just running their eye over Saki. Of course, we can watch most of his gallops these days because everybody wants to know what he's up to these days. But Ralph, are your thoughts on all of that? There's always a little bit of drama before these big races.
And I love it. And you know what? As you know, I'm the muggest of mug punters. You know, Glenn McFarlane was having a really heated debate yesterday about, you know, whether we need the international raiders and whether they add to it. And a lot of people, you know, strongly rejected that notion. I just think about Saturday as someone who, you know, is the kind of person that they want to keep dragging through the aisles and getting along, because I'm not someone who would, you know, be out there on a Tuesday afternoon. You know, we saw Moody, who might be a villain and might not be. We saw him sparring with the Channel 7 mob. We saw outstanding coverage on, you know, both Sky and Channel 7. We saw two exceptional races. You know, we saw a sprinter that broke their hearts, and then we saw a Caulfield Cup runner that broke their hearts going three wide. You know, all the things that myself, you know, who isn't fully aware of the weight scales and the handicaps and all those kind of things, they were things that I could gravitate towards. And that's the reason why I'll keep watching, you know, in Saturdays to come, because I just thought it was a captivating day of racing, you know, across both states. Yes, you can talk about whether the Everest, you know, truly arrived or whatever it might have been, but, you know, to me, it didn't take away one iota of the drama that the fact that there weren't, you know, six international raiders that might not have raced before, they're, you know, potentially adding to the theatre and to the quality of those two races.
Well, Shea, what did you think about that? And Ralph has just brought this up, and I wasn't going to bring it up once again, but Ralph's colleague and our friend here on RSN 927, Glenn McFarlane, said yesterday here on the forum, I don't think it's detracted anything from the race. I actually think it's added to the narrative this year. And he was, that's his quote after I asked him regarding not being any internationals in the Caulfield Cup. But boy, didn't it just set social media alight, including a quote there from Charlie Fellows that I'll get to in just a moment, Walshie, but I'll get your thoughts first of all.
Well, Ralphie was clearly just to backtrack, he was all over the races because he backed Dances at about 12 to 1 with his weekly wage,
yep,
which I thought was a big effort from Ralphie. So anyone who was enamoured for the rest of the afternoon. I'm all for the internationals in the race. I do think it adds an angle. And we've seen some outstanding horses come to Australia and run so well. You know, Japanese horses, German horses, even sort of looking at, you know, I think Ben Bartle won recently overseas. And you see these horses come to Australia running the best weight for age race over 2,000 metres or 2040 in the country. I love following them when they go back overseas. I think they add significantly to the weight, to the race. So I'm hoping, obviously, that we have a full, you know, full-scale spring next summer in terms of horses able to travel and arrive and race well. But we've got to make do with what we've got, and I think there's plenty of fascinating storylines in this Cox Plate as it is.
I just get a little bit, like, I think sometimes it's a little bit disrespectful, Charlie Fellows. He's a terrific bloke, and we've interviewed him on several occasions on this show, and he's a great individual to promote racing, but sometimes of late he's got his back up against Australian racing, and every time there's an opportunity for Charlie to take a shot at Australian racing, he doesn't really miss. And on the back of that tweet that we posted there yesterday, he said the November handicap in 2 weeks' time in England will be a stronger race than this was. But in hindsight, Charlie, that you're racing for, what, $57,000, yep, I think, for that handicap in 2 weeks' time. Your prize money's a disgrace. And I understand that you do add a lot when you come down here to compete in our great race. But I think sometimes there's too many of the internationals, because Australians, with any sporting fans, when you follow sport, you follow the narrative, you follow the story, you get to understand the the athlete that you're barracking for. And we learned that pretty quickly, say, in the Olympic Games, when we don't know the athletes that well, but then we understand their stories, the events get closer. We like to follow them as racing fans and sporting fans. And sometimes I think the internationals, there's some stories that really relate to us, like Charlie's horse that we embraced. But I think there's other times where, the Melbourne Cup can have too many internationals for mine. And I agree, but I think that there has to be an element of the best internationals that to come out here. But I agree with Dean Lester, what he said on Friday, and I've mentioned this a few times now, Ralphie. For the Caulfield Cup, I think it should be like our Bathurst. And the Melbourne Cup should have an element of international stardom there, and that can be our Melbourne Grand Prix.
Yeah, if there wasn't massive prestige, if there wasn't fantastic prize money, you know, if there wasn't that cachet in, you know, these international raiders coming down here and taking us on in those races, well, Charlie and co wouldn't be coming down. So, I mean, that just defeats his argument straight away. You know, just with that local connection, you know, even a really well-told story by Hamish McLaughlin on Channel 7's broadcast about, you know, the Caulfield stable shutting and some lovely Zoom shots and just some great reflections from those guys. That, to me, is something I can get my teeth into. And I thought that really added to the coverage. And, well, you know, you might get beautiful, you know, shots of Francesca, you know, walking down a country, a manor lane. But that, to me, leaves me cold. I'm not suggesting that the races are better off without them, but I'm just saying a balance is so much more important, because we can get our teeth into those local horses much more than the international raiders, who, as I've said, if they don't race, we can't be emotional about them in any way.
Put your chief of staff hats on now, lads. And AFL trade period finished last week. Back page of the Herald Sun. Phoenix X Factor, where we've got the Australian basketballer who... Dante Exum, who played really well in the Olympics, can't get a contract in the NBA, and there's a chance that he might play in the NBL. We've got the coach's big test, which we'll get to in a minute. That's written by you, Ralphie. But the back page is very elegant with Damien Lane. There's an AFLW story there with the Richmond Football Club. But pages 54, 55 are all racing. Does this make a case? And it won't happen, because the VRC simply won't move that Melbourne Cup from the first Tuesday in November, which you understand. It's got a lot of history, and I can understand their thinking. But is there a case that you can continue to build, maybe to put pressure on them to say, okay, this just proves once the trade period is out of the way, racing can really take centre stage, Walshy?
Well, I think, is it the old adage, Gareth and Ralphie, that the AFL is prepared to concede Melbourne Cup week, the Australian Open and the Boxing Day test in terms of newspaper coverage, radio coverage dominance. But for the rest of the year, they want to take, you know, they want footy on the back page wherever possible. With the women's footy coming in and pre-season training, there may not be much movement, you know, if you move away from that traditional date, which will never happen. You know, they might find themselves in a bigger fight. Look, I'd love to see all the coverage of racing. I think it's getting tremendous coverage over the next 2 to 3 weeks. Would it work if it moved back a bit later in the season? I don't think so. I think this is probably an ideal spot for it, Gareth.
Yep. Ralphie?
Yeah, look, I still think that you know, mid-November, you know, call it the sort of the first couple of weeks until, you know, obviously the Ashes series ramps up and all the selection quandaries there, I think it's the ultimate dead zone. You know, the thing is as well with racing, you tell great racing stories these days, you get rewarded. It used to be that you had a gut feel. Oh, do people really, you know, do they really want to read a heap of racing stories? Every story now has its own specific metric. It has its own, you know, basically its click count. And so if it is that we can actually tell those great stories, if it is that people will keep clicking on them, then there'll be more reward for it. Yeah, look, you know, it's fantastic to see the women's cricket getting great coverage. It's fantastic to see, you know, sports and AFL getting greater coverage. But I still believe that, yeah, that mid-November slot is absolutely open there for racing, and I think it needs to capitalise. And as it is, it's winding down. As soon as we basically hit stakes day and we're done, you know, we shut it down again and we give that coverage to cricket instead, which seems to me like a missed opportunity.
10:47, Gareth Hall, Courtney Walsh, and Mick Sharkey with you here on RSN Central's Forum. We'll take a quick break. On the other side of it, we'll come back and we'll have a chat about Novak Djokovic, Kyrie Irving, Tom McDonald, talking about the vaccinations. We'll chat about Ralphie's. There's an interesting article in the Herald Sun today regarding the coaches and the tactical buttons coaches need to push this off-season. So we'll talk to Ralphie about that as well. Plus, of course, we'll get a Cox Plate tip out of him. Here with Gareth Hall, RSN Central, on this Tuesday morning.
Your chance to be involved in the Tuesday Forum.
Welcome back to RSN Central. This is The Forum, the Tuesday Forum. Gareth Hall, Courtney Walsh and Johnny Ralph with you. We might see if we've got to grab Mitch Cleary talking to Tom McDonald. I thought we did have that grab. We'll get that in just a minute. I'll get to that in just a minute. But we might talk about the vaccination situation at the moment, Walshy. First of all, Novak Djokovic. Novak was explaining in an interview overnight that was released in the last 24 hours, saying that he'll play in three more tournaments this year in 2021, but he's unsure whether he'll come to Australia. Reading between the lines, it's more unlikely than likely that he'll be here. But he's not telling anyone if he's got vaccinated or not. He believes that's no one's business.
It's certainly a fascinating time, I think, in world sport. You know, it's happening in Australian football. It's happening in tennis. It's happening in basketball. It's happened elsewhere in terms of vaccinated and unvaccinated players and what and will they be allowed? What are the procedures if not? For Novak, he's strongly saying it's no one's business if I am or I am not. Mm-hmm. We know that in the past he certainly had anti-vaccination status, and if he's suggesting that he's in doubt to come to Australia, given we know he's such a dominant champion in Melbourne, but also very keen to create history in terms of going beyond Federer and Nadal, well, you know, it's hard to think that he probably isn't vaccinated at the moment. He can still come. I believe that there'll be a bubble and that there'll be a quarantine period. Now, if it's 2 weeks, what it's going to do for those unvaccinated players is make it a lot harder for them to be able to compete on level terms. I think the tour rate is up to about, the women think they're up to about 65% to 70% of players that are vaccinated now. And the men, I believe, will bridge that gap as well. So in some regards, it's probably getting closer to what the rest of society is like, certainly in Australia. But there will certainly be some players who may not choose to come to Melbourne as a result because it'll be harder for them to compete. And that's their choice, though. I'm for mandates, and I don't believe you can come in if you're not vaccinated.
Johnny?
Yeah, good riddance if Novak. I'll start again. Good riddance if Novak decides that he doesn't want to come to the Australian Open because he can't be vaccinated, or it's too hard to be an unvaccinated person. Look, you know, ideally, you know, we'd love not to have to force, you know, medical procedures or vaccinations on everyone. But it must be said, this is not a mandate for everyone. If you don't want to work or if you don't want to play sport, that's fine. If Tom McDonald decides that he doesn't want to earn $400,000 a season, he doesn't have to be vaccinated and he doesn't have to play AFL. Now, as he says, look, he has been vaccinated and he will obviously play this year and next year. He just feels uncomfortable about medical procedures, as he says it, being forced upon different people. So, the 65% is a disgraceful, you know, number, really, in women's tennis. When you look at Victoria's Police, you know, I think it was 40 of them decided that they didn't want to be vaccinated, of 21,000. So it just shows that these, you know, mandates, as much as you might feel a little bit uncomfortable about them, that they will save hundreds and hundreds of lives, and that's why they're necessary.
Just on that, Ralphie, in terms of, look, I'm, as you know, very pro-vaccination. There is a little factor in terms of their ability to stay in one country and be vaccinated from 1 week to the next. That's been part of the issue, is that they travel from one country to the next country to the next country. So over the next few weeks, you expect when they're back at home and training, they will have that window. That will grow, I'm sure, in the next few weeks. But one thing we should say to these players that are hesitant or not, the show will go on. It's not like, obviously the Australian Open would be better if Novak Djokovic was there.
Yeah.
But the tournament will continue. There'll be a new champion. Same in basketball. The NBA will go on. And the same in football. The AFL and the A will go on. It's not like, well, once the games are started, we don't focus on who's not there. We focus on who's playing and who's competing for the championship.
I think Kyrie Irving's about to learn all of that too in Brooklyn. I still think, if I'm a betting man, I think that Kyrie Irving will get vaccinated by the end of the season. At some period during the season, Ralphie, Kyrie Irving will get the jab.
Yeah, and I think he's, whether he's explicitly anti-vax or whether, as he says it, he just likes to question these kind of things and make people think about it. You know, I think his bluff's been very well called by the Brooklyn general manager. He said that he just can't play and he can't train if he isn't vaccinated. Just interestingly, in the last 10 minutes, Washington State's NFL coach or American gridiron coach has been sacked with cause after he and his assistants decided not to be vaccinated. He had said that he would likely be vaccinated even though he didn't agree with it. And so there's going to be these really tough questions. But, you know, for the good of society, society, you know, I can see why people are pushing a really hard line. Now, you know, the interesting one yesterday we broke that the Richmond AFLW player had tested positive, and so, you know, the rest of the players were in isolation. It may well be that they're in isolation for up to 2 weeks, which would be the worst case scenario. So, you know, it's just going to be the tip of the iceberg. There are going to be so many of these COVID positives. And so what happens in the NFL is that, as we saw with Cliff Kingsbury, who's the Arizona Cardinals NFL coach, it was so close to a game when he tested positive that he wasn't able to coach. But all he needs is two negative tests and to be symptom free over 24 hours, he can get back in. And so right now these are these are big issues. You know, it's forcing back the Richmond preseason. But you know, I think within the space of weeks or potentially months, it'll just be okay. Yep, another COVID case. You know, you isolate for 24 hours, you get your negative test, and you move on. And it'll just be part of society. You know, if we can all be vaccinated, which is why we're pushing it so hard.
Here's Tom McDonald talking to Mitch Cleary about the vaccination situation in the AFL and his beliefs on it.
I think we were on track. We would have got 90% as a state anyway, and I don't see why we needed to cause such sort of issues and division by forcing people in many jobs where it's probably not as necessary.
No issue at all. That's why you get vaccinated. You protect yourself. I don't understand why we need to force other players too.
It's an interesting take from Tom McDonald, Walshy.
Well, I mean, isn't it that you protect yourself and you protect others?
Yeah.
That's the point that I think is lost there. It's not just about protecting yourself. It's about protecting others.
You need to listen. Yeah. And I think that's the point that they need to get at. That they need to understand, Ralphie, that it's not protecting yourself. It's protecting the people and their families around you.
Yeah, and look, it's all very well for Tom to say that, you know, we would have got to 90%. So when would we have got to 90%? And potentially would we? You know, you see with United Airlines over in America, you know, there was something like 84% in terms of vaccination, which is reasonable. But as we know, it's not going to be enough given, you know, given some of the experiences in places like Singapore. Now, as soon as they put that mandate in, you know, within the space of weeks, they got to 92%. Yeah. And say, oh, what's 8%, you know, between friends? But it may well be the difference between, again, you know, significant lockdowns and more people dying. And so, yeah, I just think the people of Victoria voted with their, you know, with their left and right arms. You know, they've done an extraordinary job to get vaccinated. And, yeah, as I said, Tom very much has a choice, but that choice would be not being vaccinated and stepping out of football. And if he'd like to do that, that's fine. He hasn't done it, and I think the mandates have absolutely worked. And I think he will be in a football code next year that will have very, very strong crowds, if not 100% crowds from round one, because of these mandates. And I think, you know, he will benefit from that largesse in a new CBA rights because of people who've made really tough decisions, which include mandates.
Ralphie, what was the inspiration behind your story in the Herald Sun today? Was it coaches under the most amount of pressure, or was it coaches that you thought that need to think outside the square to come up with a tactic that will help them elevate their side into a premiership contender? Because looking at it last year, this time last year, if you did a poll, the coach under the most amount of pressure would have been this year's premiership coach and Simon Goodwin.
Yeah, no, it was very much the latter. You know, it was very much these coaches who need significant improvement. You know, I think if Port don't win the flag, I don't think Kenny Hinckley's going to get sacked. You know, if Geelong don't win the flag, I don't think Chris Scott's going to get sacked.
Yeah.
But, you know, seeing, you know, probably, you know, positions 2 to 10 on the ladder, not appreciably improving over trade period, I just thought to myself, you know, I love it. I love the fact that these coaches are going to have to get better themselves with their coaching panels rather than just rely on talent. And so for Kenny Hinckley, it is the fact that he needs to, you know, bring his three young stars into the midfield. You know, for Geelong, it is the fact that they need to, you know, have better ball movement at times when Tom Stewart's not firing or he's not there or they're playing a brilliant midfield like Melbourne. And so, yeah, it wasn't so much the pressure gauge as much as saying, righto, what do you got for us? You know, we've seen in America that the cult of the superstar saviour coach hasn't necessarily worked. You know, we've seen without Tom Brady that Bill Belichick hasn't been able to cut the mustard this year. We saw that John Gruden, you know, was pretty mediocre as the $100 million coach before, of course, all those horrific things. And so, yeah, I just love the fact that these coaches are going to have to innovate and they're going to have to bring in new skills and they're going to have to get the most out of their players next year. There'll be a couple of them that'll be sacked and there'll be a couple of them potentially replaced by Nathan Buckley and Alistair Clarkson. But the rest of them, I think, will go back to the well over the summer and we'll come up with incredible tactics that potentially we'll see them get contract extensions on lucrative deals.
Heaps of SMSs to get through before we wrap up the Tuesday forum. because it's AFLW simple. Why does everything have to equal the AFL was here first? Simple as that, load of rubbish. Ralphie, not PC, you were kidding. Leave AFL name as is. AFLW is a secondary competition and can't pretend to be anything else. That's from Lex there, Ralphie.
Well, secondary competition, yeah, quite clearly it's been around for longer, and I've probably always held that view. All I'm saying is that I couldn't really defend it to my 8-year-old daughter, and I'm coming around, in a much more significant fashion than maybe I ever would have been before.
Gareth, it's ridiculous to suggest the AFL trade dribble will cause any movement to spring carnival. Ha ha! What a crock! Not everyone cares about the AFL, especially in the off season. That's from Jay. Why is the England prize money so bad? Because there's been bad deals done with the corporate bookmakers with their revenue streams, and this is a lesson that Australia need to learn from what's happening in Europe and Ireland, because their prize money is ridiculous. And you feel for the participants. Doesn't matter how good their horses are, really. Well, it does. You respect their stock, but their prize money is embarrassing. Now, another question for Walshy. Here's your tip for the Cox Plate. That's from Terry.
I love my 3-year-old, so I'll be going with James Cummings' horse, Animo.
Ralph, have you got a tip? What's your punters club doing this time around?
No idea. We'll wait for Bushy to roll through at about 10:30 on a Saturday morning, and I'll have about 7 bets, and probably none of them will win. So no, don't go for meat if you tips.
What about in the NFL? You've got Tennessee taking on Buffalo. Buffalo, surely good things. $1.37, better than bank interest there, Ralphie. Just put it all on.
Well, they just haven't got any weaknesses right now, you know, and obviously Tennessee, we love what they've been able to do, and we love Derrick Henry, but yeah, I mean, Buffalo's got a couple of great running backs. It's got an emerging quarterback. It's got, Allen, who's got a great arm, who runs. It's got a marauding defence. So, yeah, they're my Super Bowl tip. It's not really going out in the limb to suggest that the best team in it is going to win the Super Bowl, but it's just been captivating drama. And now that we get, Friday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday NFL, it's been brilliant. For those that don't watch it, get on NFL Red Zone and just sit down and waste the morning on a Monday. It's bloody brilliant.
Good on you, Ralphie. Thanks for that, mate.
Cheers.
Good on you, Walshy.
Thanks, gents. Have a great week.
Enjoy your Sunday night at the Ascot Vale Hotel. Have a lot of fun.
We'll raise a glass for you.
Yeah. Well done. Thanks very much for that. Geez, it's like you're not getting... You know when you're playing your local sporter at school and you had to pick sides, and I was always the last one to get selected in the side. Thanks. That's how I feel with Walshy and Ralphie just giving me the pass on by for the Ascot Vale on a Sunday night. Geez, it would be a lot of fun to get back to the pub. Can't wait anyway on a Saturday. It's 4 minutes past 11. The midweek masterclass coming up next, thanks to the mailbag team.